Hello, everyone. It's time for another edition of Adventures in Careerland. I am Adriano Magnifico. I am your host for this great podcast. It is a podcast about adventures and careers, hence the name. And we're all about trying to help students find their pathways and think about where their best selves may lie. And we're coming live. We're actually taped, but we'll be live one day. And we're coming live from the Louis Riel Arts and Tech Center Podcast Center in the Broadcast Media Program. And the Broadcast Media Program is one of those 13 programs that include applied business management, automotive technology, baking, pastry, building, childhood educator, electrical trades, aesthetics, hairstyling, information systems, new media design, plumbing. Geez, if you're a high school student, you get a chance to come out here and test out your skills and find out, I wonder if I can do something more than just the academic program. So it's a really neat place. One of the gems is this broadcast media program. And we're sitting in a podcast studio in their broadcast center in the Arts and Tech Center. And this is a really neat place because we have co-hosts who help us in this space. One of them is André Poirier from the broadcast media program. How are you, sir?
I am doing great. How are you doing, Mr. Magnifico?
Well, you know, I'm always having a great day. And I like your tone, as sad as it is, sounds slightly higher. You have a little more energy today, so I'm super excited. But you guys are super busy today. The kids in the broadcast media program are super busy. Tell me what's going down right now, quickly.
Right now, we are doing a little competition with our class. Instead of doing, say, okay, let me explain. Skills, Manitoba, huge thing. Across the province, a bunch of people come in from different schools and do a competition. We had to do that. A few of us, so me and Vincent and Grace and Achilles, all had to go there and had 5 hours to film and edit a video with a specific topic. We're doing that again today, just with the class. So we're running around, taking a break right now from it. So honestly, pretty fun. Very stressful.
It's amazing. I've been photobombing every one of your events just to mess you up. And I love that you're doing, I love the hands-on piece of this and that you are running around the hallway trying to make this work. And you get, what, 5 hours to make it go?
5 hours.
And that's it?
That's it.
See, school doesn't do projects like that. It doesn't put the pressure on. What does it feel like when you got the pressure on you, my friend?
It feels very nervous. I feel very nervous right now because I feel like I'm missing out on time, even though I am getting given an extra hour.
Well, you're in the podcast. Isn't that a good
facsimile? Oh, I am absolutely. I'm so happy. I get a little break, get a little bit of a mental moment to think.
Oh, that's good. That was a good answer, by the way. Anyway, we also have Lena Alfori, and she's from the Applied Business Management Program. Lena, how are you today?
I'm doing really good.
And what did you just finish up there?
In what, sorry?
In your program. You're busy in your program, too.
We're not as busy as the broadcast media, but we just went to the Gold Eyes facility. We had a tour there, and we went to the Leaf. I don't know what really any of it has to do with business, but it was really fun.
What are you talking about? You're beginning to see the back scenes operation of what something looks like.
Yeah, the facility was cool.
Like, but all students remember in their lives, they don't remember that quadratic equation they did. They remember that they went to the Leaf.
Yeah, that's true.
And they remembered what they saw. And they remembered what connected to them, and they may gravitate towards some piece of that in their life. You just added a couple of interesting pieces to the jigsaw of Lena. So it's important when you do that and always think about that. You also finished the Tiger's Den. We run a Tiger's Den competition here. You just sent me a video on it that I'm sending out to business partners. Mm-hmm. How was that?
It was really fun. I did it with one of my friends, Renee, from class, and it was really awkward. It took like a couple takes for us to get it right, but I think it was okay.
Yeah, I looked at it. I think it's interesting.
It's not bad.
Could use the third take, but
yeah.
I liked it.
I agree.
And I'm super glad you did it. Mm-hmm. I think those things help you think about problems to solve and ideas, and you have your own little small business on the side. Do a little shout out for your small business, your
LA,
side hustle.
LA by Lena Alfori. It's my clothing brand, so yeah. That's on Instagram and YouTube, everything. Like, I'm everywhere. LA by Lena Alfori.
So I'm really fortunate to have these two crackerjack students, these co-hosts with me in this program, because they're so smart. They're thinkers. They're critical thinkers. And they love getting their hands dirty and getting work done, right?
Yes.
In your life. The academic program's been very important to both of you. It's taught you to read, write, do the math, do the thinking. And now you're applying that learning to these projects that are making a difference in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love that you're doing that. You're all going to come out of this program as changed people with a deeper sense of, this is who I am. This is what I think I want to go towards. This is what I want to, this is what I gravitate towards. I think it's fantastic. Hey, we're lucky. We have a person like that in our studio today. And he's one of these people who does hands-on stuff. And when you look at his LinkedIn profile, he's a busy fellow who's participated in a lot of activities that have helped to build his persona and build his sense of who he is. I'm talking about Andrew Cousy, who is the executive director of the Dream Factory. Andrew, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, what a pleasure to have you. And we like having people in the studio. How excited are you two in the studio?
It is. It is. It's very nice. It's better than having somebody on a Zoom call.
That's yeah, right. I agree.
The quality.
And thanks
likes.
For the wolf calling. It was good. We'll edit that out later.
Love it.
Yeah, that's perfect. Andrew, you're a grade 11 kid at J.H. Brown's 2009 graduating. Mm-hmm. Do you remember way back when?
I do. It wasn't that long ago.
Now you're a sophisticated young man, an executive in the business. But you're in the nonprofit sector, and you went to university to not necessarily go in that direction.
No, I went to, so I'm a proud University of Winnipeg graduate. I went to study marketing and communications, thinking, you know, I might work in an ad agency one day, one of those places that has, you know, a foosball table and provides lunch and like that, like Google type environment. I really thought that's where I was heading. So
looking for a good time.
Yeah, I was looking for just like a cool, flashy marketing gig is what I was out to do. But that changed for me while I was at the University of Winnipeg. I had this moment where I was just in the hallway. I would think I was heading to one of my classes. And one of my professors, an individual who I had taken a number of courses with throughout the duration of my business degree, kind of stopped me in the hallway. And I can't remember exactly what he said. It was something to the effect of, hey, you know, I was reading one of your papers, or I was thinking about you, and I really think you should consider a career in not-for-profit business development. And I looked at him and I kind of like turned my head sideways and I said, not-for-profit business development, does that just mean like fundraising? Does that just mean like asking people for money? And he said, yeah, like working with nonprofits to like help them grow and help them operate. And I looked at him and I said, that sounds horrible. Like, absolutely not. I do not want to do that.
That's the end of the podcast.
Sure enough, the lesson is to sometimes people know you better than you know yourself. My first gig out of university was at an organization called Ronald McDonald House that is a home away from home for kids in our province that are battling difficult illnesses. And ever since then, I haven't looked back. I've been in the nonprofit space now for over a decade. Had a bunch of different experiences that we'll chat through, but just it was a moment on that kind of academic journey that kind of changed my course. And I've reached out to him a number of times over the years just to express my gratitude and say thanks that he kind of made that comment and made me think twice about kind of the direction I was going and what might be a good fit for me and what I would find meaningful. And I'm just really grateful to have had someone who was kind of thinking about me and my path and to reach out and make a comment like that.
And how important is that, Andrew? Think about it. Someone tapped you on the shoulder and kind of said, I see something in you that you probably don't see in yourself. And how important would that have been in high school? And does high school have enough of that? Because in high school, you had a bit of a path in your mind, right? Here's where I'm going into business. And business, Lena's in business. She's taking applied business management here. So she's in that path. And business is the, I'll take business. I don't know what I want to do, but I'm going to take business because it has that ubiquitous air to it, right? I can do many things in business. So in high school, you're doing the business path. Nonprofit's not even on your brain wave, right?
No.
You don't even know what it is, really, do you? You're volunteering everywhere, probably, because you're a good guy. And I know your mom's a great person. Oh. So you're probably getting her out and make sure she listens to this podcast.
I sure will.
Okay. What's going on in your brain in high school about, here's what I think I want to do? And was there enough of the tap on the shoulder in high school?
That's a great question. I think you don't know what you don't know. And I think you get these
booklets from post-secondary institutions that say you can study this or you can study this or you can study this. But the things that there is such a decision overload, perhaps, that it's hard to make some of those decisions. And you, I think human nature is to kind of zoom in on the information that you have in front of you. And when you have these kind of guides or books or websites or whatever that say, here are your options, we're kind of innately set to just choose from the options that are presented in front of us. And when there's things that we don't know or options that aren't presented, that is, those things don't come to the surface as much. And I think that's the benefit of the tap on the shoulder, right? Is it kind of takes you from looking at the, you know, 15 options in front of you and can veer you off on a different direction.
And the beauty of the tap is they're watching you in action. And yeah, you can't watch yourself. It's like this curse of knowledge I talk about. Ideo is this problem-solving company that talks about David Kelly, who runs it, talks about problem-solving, talks about the curse of knowledge. We know ourselves so well, we don't even know, we react naturally. We don't even know exactly how to answer, tell us about us, about yourself in an interview kind of thing.
Well, and like to think back to grade 11 or 12, like you also, those are periods of such great change. Like it's not as easy to think back to that time. If you had asked me in grade 12, like, what are you good at? It's a much different question to answer than it would be for me today. You're not as solid in those things. And that also makes it more difficult to make decisions, right? So when someone else makes that tap on the shoulder and sees you and says, I think you're good at these things, it can kind of reinforce some of that and help you step more confidently into a particular direction or space.
That's perfect. That's exactly right.
Who was your biggest tap on the shoulder?
For me, it was that situation. That was the biggest kind of inflection point that actually changed my path. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I was thinking about on my drive over here is I think over the course of my career development, I collected a lot of kind of informal mentors, people who I know now in hindsight helped me along my journey and that I learned a lot from and that I kind of modeled after. But those relationships were always kind of informal and never kind of explicit. If I could go back and do it again, I think one of the things that I would change and one of the things that I would suggest to young people who are starting their careers is to actually make those relationships a little bit more explicit and formal. To say, will you be my mentor? I am hoping to learn this thing and improve this skill, and I think I could learn a lot from you. I had those opportunities, but they were a little bit more informal and ambiguous, and I can recognize it as mentorship now. But in the moment, I didn't necessarily know that that's what it was. And I think I would have benefited even more had I had the kind of confidence to say, hey, I really respect you, and I think you do really cool work, and I would love for you to like be my mentor, and I'd love to learn these things from you. I think that doesn't happen enough.
You know what's interesting too? You went back to that key mentor and you talked to him and thanked him. And I can't tell you how important that is. I had a mentor in high school, Lynn Axworthy, who was my English teacher. And she got me into writing that I didn't start writing later. She kept saying, she introduced me to these writers in the sports arenas. Jack Matheson, I remember, for the Tribune. And she said, you can write, you can write, you can write, you can write. And I only started doing that later. And when I never said thank you to her, and when she got very sick, I did call her at one point. I didn't know she was ill, but I got to talk to her, and it's still one of the most meaningful conversations I've ever had from someone who tapped me on the shoulder. But you don't get it at the time. You're nailing it, Andrew. You don't get it at the time. But I love that you're going back to say, look what you did for me. I really appreciate that.
There's something special when you can then also turn around and give something back to those people who have done something for you, but also just to like keep those folks in your world and let them see what you're doing and share some of those stories. I think it's important And in a community like we have here in Winnipeg, it's just part of the journey.
And were you always as involved as you are now, or were you kind of a quieter kid in high school, like growing up?
No, I was pretty involved through high school and university. And I think, here's what I'll say about it. I think involvement doesn't need to mean that you're like on student council or that you're like in all of these clubs. I think you don't have to necessarily do all of those things, but I think involvement in something that you care about is important. And that is how you, start to find opportunities in community and where you can build some of those networks out.
So where did you find, in high school, what were the couple of the activities you did? Were you a sports guy, or were you more of a political person? What were you? Nonprofit in there? Were those seeds being dropped inadvertently and you didn't even realize it yet?
I think so. I was really involved. I was a student council kid when I was in high school. I participated in Junior Achievement. That was like one of our programs that we did. But just really involved in a lot of those types of kind of clubs and groups, which looking back in hindsight now is not totally different than working in the nonprofit world, where you're trying to do a lot with a little and you learn to do a little bit of everything and you have all of these different experiences in service of a group that's not your own. Like those are, I can see now that is kind of what was happening, but it was just about kind of being involved, seeing what exists and figuring out kind of what drove me.
You were Junior Achievement. I'm a kid, and that's where I worked with Junior Achievement for many years. And I can't emphasize the value of that program to students. Just talk quickly, because I know Lipsick may be listening to this.
Yeah, I hope he is.
I'll tell him, you got to listen to this one, Lipsick. And Greg Lipsick is the CEO of Junior Achievement Manitoba. How important was that? I find when kids do Junior Achievement, it's life-changing to them. That program changes them. How do you think about that program?
My journey with Junior Achievement, I participated in the program as a student, and then while I was in university, I got involved as a volunteer in running some of those programs. And then over the last, you know, I want to say 5 years, I just stepped off, but I served as a member of the board for the organization and actually helped to drive some of the strategic decisions and support the growth of the organization. So I've been involved in a number of roles. But I think as a student, one of the things is the program just provides a little bit of a push. Like you're a little bit out of your comfort zone. You're talking to new people about new things. You're learning how to sell stuff. You're learning how to talk, make strategic decisions. You're learning how to kind of represent a company or a brand. These are all things that you can carry into really anything that you do. But it just, from a confidence perspective, I think it was just one more experience that added a few things to your toolkit that maybe you won't need, but that you can draw on and pull from later.
Right, because if a kid won't do something unless they're like something they won't like or something that's out of their comfort zone, unless they're kind of shoved into that direction to do it, like they have this big wall in front of them, they go, that's my comfort zone, I don't want to go out there, that's scary. And it seems to me like Junior Achievement, you said, just kind of shoves them into there. Do you think it's like a lot more of, I don't know, pushing them into that direction?
Well, where do you find the courage? Like, where do you find courage? Like, high school for me is a bit about courage.
Sure, absolutely.
And life is about courage. It's that moment where I'm a little uncertain. I like what you were saying, Andre. I'm a little uncertain. I feel fearful. I'm going to try it. Yeah. And it's, you slowly develop this kind of, you talk about a wall. You slowly break down some of the bricks of those walls when you feel like, I did it.
Yeah,
I did it. And when you do it with a team, how more satisfying. You choose team stuff, Andrew. All your stuff is about a team.
Yeah.
So what is the power of a team to you?
I think, yeah, it's a great question. I think the power of a team is safety. It's feeling safe to try things. It's feeling safe to be vulnerable and say, I really want to do this. I really want to try this. It might not work, but we're gonna give it our best. I think it's safety to also like have conflict and manage that. And like, that's where growth and change is produced. It's something that it's a journey that we're on at the Dream Factory. Currently, we're in a season of tremendous change at the organization, and we're only able to make that change because we've spent a lot of time as a team talking about things like values, talking about how we operate as a team, what do we believe in, how do we treat each other, what is important to us. And because we've done that work, we're able to make change and grow and do that, I think, a lot more quickly than we would have otherwise, because we know what to do when conflict comes up. We know what to do when something doesn't work, and we're aligned in the same end goal. So regardless of what that journey looks like, there's this culture of understanding and support that allows us to continue moving forward. And that takes a lot. And I think there's a lot of time and care that has to go into building that the right way.
You talk about the Dream Factory. What is the Dream Factory?
Yeah.
There we go. That's a great question.
I'd love to chat about the Dream Factory. So the Dream Factory is a Manitoba-based children's charity. We work with kids and families in our province that have a child battling a life-threatening illness. One of the primary things that folks know us for is that we make a big dream come true for kids in the community that are fighting a life-threatening illness. So that can be travel, a trip to Disney, a trip to, we have a dream kid in Paris as we speak. It can be an experience. We've done celebrity meet and greets with folks like Dolly Parton or Billie Eilish. It can be a bedroom makeover, a backyard makeover. So what people know us most for is that big experience. One of the things that the Dream Factory does that I want people to know more about is that we actually support families throughout the duration of their child's medical journey. So from the moment we first meet a family to the moment that a child might be old enough to say, look, I don't need to come out to Dream Factory stuff anymore. I'm ready for my next chapter. On average, a family is staying active and involved with the organization between 5 and 7 years. So it's an ongoing community of support. We want to be there, you know, after tests and treatments. We want to be there on hard days. We want to be there for big celebrations. We are just a complement to the children's medical system to provide recreation, fun, support, hope, joy, all of those things that families are telling us they need as they go on these really difficult journeys.
And what's your specific role? Like, what do you do in the Dream Factory?
Yeah, so I'm the executive director of the organization. We are a team of 7 staff at the moment, 7 full-time staff. And my job is to kind of make sure that the organization operates. We're an organization of it's between $2.5-3 million a year. And all of those pieces, so from managing HR to creating communications plans to working on the program side, a big function of my role is fundraising and making sure the organization has the funds that it needs to operate, managing the team. But really, it's a little bit of everything in that role. But really, the function is to report to the board, make sure we're driving our strategic priorities forward, representing the organization in the community, and making sure that the organization can operate in a sustainable way and grow to meet the demand of the kids that we're serving and the families.
Yeah, because that was one of my questions. Like, how does a nonprofit get the money to be able to do it? Like, if you're sending a kid to Paris, that's their dream. Where's that money? How are you going to get it there? How are you going to get them there? And it seems like fundraisers. So do you run these fundraisers, or do you just get money from them?
So the Dream Factory you'll see, like, across our community, different organizations are in different situations. Some organizations receive some support from government in terms of core funding. There's organizations like United Way and the Winnipeg Foundation who provide a significant amount of support to organizations in our community. The Dream Factory is an organization that doesn't receive any core or government funding. So every dollar that we have to spend to support families, make dreams come true, pay staff, you know, like run our, pay our internet bill, all of those things. Every dollar that we have to spend is raised through a fundraising effort. So what that means and kind of the privilege of that is that every dollar that comes through to the organization comes from someone in Manitoba who believes in the work that we're doing. So we're incredibly diligent about how we make our expenditures, how we're supporting our families, because we know we're only able to do what we do because people who live here and people who are seeing what the organization is doing and what we're trying to do are putting their hand up to say, I believe this is important. I'm going to help support and be part of that.
Right.
So everything that we do is fundraised in one way or another, whether that's an event, just a straight donation ask, a kind of mailing campaign. We have a really kind of comprehensive and sophisticated fundraising program to make sure the organization can operate the way it needs to.
Now, you just had a massive fundraiser, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that fundraiser, because I was following it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, so...
And I, of course, I saw it at the end. I went, oh, you're having a massive fundraiser. Like, I'm not on LinkedIn all the time, but I went, oh, I just missed your fundraiser. So talk about that.
We had it on April 26th. That was the end of the month. It was our 28th Dream Maker auction. So it's Manitoba's largest charity auction, all in support of the Dream Factory. We had about 1,000 people in the room join us. And it really is what you think. We had some incredible auction prizes. I want to say we had 45 prizes in our auction. We have an incredible team who comes out and leads an auction, and folks are quite generous in the room. Some of the cool prizes we had were a 5-day guided trip to Patagonia in Chile, a private kind of wine tour in Tuscany. We had two VIP floor tickets for a Taylor Swift concert in Toronto.
Oh my god. Wow.
And people were...
That's your thing, eh?
People were amped up about...
My thing. Yeah, I'm a
Swiftie. All fueled by the generosity of our community, right? Those prizes are coming via donation. We're able to auction those off and fund the work that we're doing. This year's event was our largest ever, both in terms of attendance, but also in terms of fundraising. We announced a really generous gift from Mr. Jim Goche of the Goche Automotive Group, who has been supporting the Dream Factory for many, many years.
And who just won the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
Recognition as one of Manitoba's...
Yes, the day before.
Business builders, correct?
Yeah, it was that was the evening before our event. So Mr. Goche had a busy week.
Oh my gosh.
He announced a donation of $250,000 to support a project that we're working on to build a new Dream Factory in our community. And with that donation included, our event on April 26th raised $1.1 million. So it was a big night for the organization, a big night for a small charity that has a team of, you know, 7 full-time staff, and an outcome that is only possible because we have many, many incredible dedicated volunteers, lots of prize donors who believe in the work that we're doing, and people who wanted to come out and really make it a really successful evening. So nothing but gratitude for everyone who made that possible for us.
Hey, think about what you do. It must be heart-wrenching work you do sometime, because you're dealing with kids who are down on their luck.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be a bit of a roller coaster emotionally for you sometime, to, and for your team sometime. It can be.
The thing we talk about a lot and the kind of framing or perspective that we try to keep is that to do this work is a privilege. To get to be the best part of someone's bad day is like a really incredible gift to be able to give. And when you have families that are going through the worst experience of their lives, and you get to spend some time with them and be the highlight of their day or their month or their year, and your job is to like figure out what those opportunities are to like make those highlights possible, it's a responsibility we take very seriously, but it's also a privilege, and it's work that provides perspective every day. You know, if you screw up a deal or send out the wrong email or show up to work late or any, like, whatever happens in your day, you always have the perspective working with these kids and their families who live here in our community of like what's really important, you know. And that's something I'm forever grateful for, and part of why I love working in the nonprofit space so much.
Well, you talked quickly at the beginning about fundraising. Is it just fundraising? Remember that opening line? Is this just fundraising? Your professor.
Yeah.
It's not just about fundraising.
No. I've learned so much about fundraising, and it's work I'm incredibly proud to do. And I like being out in the community talking about fundraising. The biggest misconception about the work is the one that I had when I talked to my professor, that fundraising is asking people for money and hoping they give it to you. Fundraising, all it is when you believe really strongly in something that is going to make a difference for other people, connecting with people in our community and inviting them to join you in being part of it. That is what the work of fundraising is. I say often when I'm delivering trainings or talking to new fundraisers, I don't feel like I've ever asked anyone for money. I have invited people to join us in the work that we're doing if it feels meaningful to them and if they believe in the work that we're doing. And I think there are many, many folks in our community who have joined us on that journey and are really glad that they did.
Well, I know in our JA team, we've actually contributed, I think, to
many times
the Dream Factory mission, just because when I bring it up with students about to whom are we giving some of our profit,
right?
And we explain some of the Dream Factory mantra, it's an easy sell. It is an easy sell. And I like what you're saying. It's not about giving money. It's about sharing your vision and just seeing just so much possibility. And I just think, Andrew, I feel so weirdly proud of you and the work you're all doing, because you're in our division. You were a student in our division. And I know your mom. I really think you're doing God's work doing this stuff. Like, you're changing, the lives of people. And when you can have a career that does that, you guys, I say to my two co-hosts, you're going to find a niche in your life that's so meaningful, so purposeful, and just, it's going to inspire you every day. Do you feel inspired every day?
Totally, totally. And I think more technically for students who might be listening and being like, I don't know what I want to do, I always recommend a starting point in nonprofit if you're not sure, because you are going to get such a wealth of experience. One of the things I wouldn't recommend coming out of high school or university or college or whatever is taking a job that is narrow in scope, you know, where you're only doing this one thing over and over and over again and building this one skill. You will never, ever find that in the nonprofit space. You will be doing a million different things and developing a bunch of skills that aren't in your job description, but that's okay. And you'll figure out what you're good at. You'll figure out what you're not good at, but it's such a good opportunity to try and learn a bunch of different things, but also feel good while you're doing it. It's the ultimate learning opportunity and the place to kind of grow and figure out where you want to go. So I always recommend, if you're not sure, take a start in nonprofit and try a bunch of different things.
And I think that creates the dexterous kind of young worker, right?
Yeah.
Like, once you develop this sense of the many things that you're capable of, then your job possibility doesn't become this needle in a haystack. Whatever's out there, I have to take.
Totally.
You become the creator of your destiny. You can start picking and choosing what you want to do in your life as you become more equipped to talk about your skill set because you're actually developing them.
So instead of finding the needle in the haystack, you're grabbing the hay straws.
You're just grabbing a big chunk of that hay every time you go for a job now. You're thinking about it.
And just building skills for the sake of building skills, not necessarily for a particular position or role or stream. And I think that's not always what's done.
Because it'll help you eventually.
Totally. It's putting as many tools in the toolkit as you possibly can. And that's what nonprofit work allows you to do.
That's awesome. Andrew, we do something a little odd here. It's been a lame activity, but hopefully it will.
Because of Andre, though. Mine's always good.
Look at the co-hosts turning on each other. It's a beautiful moment here. Maybe you can do a little reconciliation with them, Andrew. Anyway, we do something called Quick Keys. To Lena, and she's going to put you through this little gauntlet. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Lena, explain what this is.
So what cues are, it's a series of this or that questions, and you don't have to think about it for too long. You just pick an answer.
Okay.
Okay?
Do we need justifications or no?
No.
You're good.
This or that, okay. I'm ready.
Breakfast or dinner?
Breakfast.
Owe money or owe a favor?
Owe a favor.
Roommates or live alone?
Live alone.
Poor and famous or rich and unknown?
What?
Rich and unknown.
Wow. A movie or book?
Book.
Passenger or driver?
Passenger.
Comedy or horror?
Comedy.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Outside or inside?
Inside.
Morning or night person?
Night.
And last but not least, what is the best podcast?
Oh, this one. Adventures in Fairyland. Understood the assignment.
Yeah, literally.
Now we can actually upload this.
I love it.
You've answered the right question. That's the key that unlocks the door to the uploading.
If you didn't say that, we wouldn't upload this episode.
Or we stop it and say, stop, try that question again. We've actually had to do that. There's some people go off, well, I like the Deep State podcast. No. That's not the answer, my friend. It's Adventures in Career Land.
For any other question, there is no wrong answer. But for this one, there is.
So any last thoughts about what you might want to say to a young person thinking about what's the path I should consider?
I think there's two things. I think when you're not sure of the path, I think being involved in a bunch of different things is a good way to like figure out where you want to go. And those things don't have to be tied to a career goal, but just like be active in the community in a way that feels meaningful to you and that is like aligned with things that you're interested in. So that can be a sports team, a club, whatever. Once you're there, you'll start to see people doing work that looks or sounds interesting. I think the other tip that I always try to kind of pass along is don't feel limited by like the options in front of you. If there's an organization that you're interested in, if there's a particular like line of work that you're interested in, don't let the fact that there are no like job openings be a limiting factor. The informational interview, I think, is one of the best things that young people can do. If there's things that you're interested in, email whoever is running that organization, ask them for 20 minutes of their time, express your interest in their organization or their work, and all of a sudden, you don't necessarily have to wait for these openings to appear. You know, I reached out to the Dream Factory when I was working in a different organization to say, I don't know what your strategic plan is. I don't know when you're going to be hiring. This is who I am. This is what my skill set is. This is what I've done. If and when you are ready to like potentially have someone like me join the organization, I would be very interested. And I think it took 18 months from when those conversations started, but that call came back to me. So just like chase the things that you want and ask for them. And I think that's the number one rule of fundraising is that you don't get if you don't ask. But that's also true like in your careers. If there are things you want to be doing, ask the people who can make those things happen for you. The worst thing anyone is ever going to say is no or not right now. But the door is open and you've started the journey.
Andrew, that's incredible advice. I can say we try to do that here, the informational interview. It's difficult in high school. It's
I agree.
It's totally like you nailed it. The high school experience is kind of surreal. You're trying different things. You're hanging with your friends. You're socializing. You're going to watch the football game or the basketball game, and you're just enjoying it. You're enjoying that experience. High school is such a powerful, unique, and just enlightening experience. And you shouldn't be thinking about, what should I do for the rest of my life in high school? I really believe that. I think you should enjoy it and build the skills, inadvertently build those skills, by just participating in life in your high school.
Yeah, just like do things.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Just do stuff. Yeah.
Totally.
Knight nailed it. Yeah. Just do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, this is good. Hey, Andrew, I so appreciate you being here.
Of course. Of course, I've loved it.
Oh, well, and you're an LRSD grad, which makes me ultra happy. And know your mom makes me double happy. And I know you come from great stock.
Well, thank you.
100%. And the work you're doing is life-altering. But your perspective on it all is so purposeful. It is so incredible to think that a young kid in J.H. Bruns, who is sitting around joining the occasional club, trying out different things, is now making such a difference in the world. So I feel great to have you at this table. You've taken your discretionary time to be here. That's special to me. It's special to our co-host. And we couldn't be happier to have a guest like you on this podcast. Any parting shots?
No parting shots for me. Thank you for having me. I am just so, so pleased to be here and spend some time with everyone. It's been awesome.
Great. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you to Achilles, Boras, Chin Kai Chan, and Grace Ross, who have been producing. This is a busy time for the broadcast media kids because they're in the middle of this giant competition in their program, as Andre pointed out. So I appreciate them taking the time. They're producers. They've been pointing at me in the window many times, reminding us of times, making sure our sound is up to date, and making sure this podcast runs as well as it does. So I appreciate the producers. Co-hosts, as always, thank you for taking time out of your schedule. And Andrew, you've been an inspiration today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for another edition of Adventures in Careerland.